nice to be here. I love you all.
So hello and welcome to this kind of podcast. This week going for something slightly different. We're broadcasting live from the Dublin International Film Festival, the Virgin Media Dublin International Film Festival. And joining me are...
Alex.
Jay.
And Ron.
And this is going to be a very brief one because we're literally right between films at the moment. So we're going to ask, what have your highlights been of the festival so far? Alex.
My highlight is a film I was really looking forward to, Paolo Sorrentino's Loro, which I liked a lot more than I thought I was going to. I'd heard kind of mixed things about this, kind of because it was released in two parts in Italy, so it was kind of hard to gauge whether or not, what the actual reaction was. But I really liked it. It was... It's sort of the story of Silvio Berlusconi in a particular period in his life where he wasn't in power, but the way it sort of sets it up I thought was fantastic. They focus on a character who's sort of, he's a bit of a pimp, I suppose, and he starts assembling a cavalcade of beautiful women who are all themselves fascinated by this idea of spending time with Berlusconi. But the first hour of the film, there's no Berlusconi. Everyone's just talking about, like, this character. And it's funny because they refer to him as... Oh,
him.
Yeah, but then...
Him.
So they're like, oh, have you heard? He's got a house up there. Him. Yeah. As in him.
There's a moment where one character's phone rings and literally the name that comes across is Louis, which is him.
Yeah.
Loro itself being an Italian word for them that exists. So it's the idea is there's him and there's them.
And the opening of the film particularly, and I think Sorrentino's got this fantastic ability to kind of find and be so stylish and over the top with things, but then sort of focus on the emptiness of that kind of style and over the topness. But he's absolutely aping Goodfellas. And at a certain point, you kind of realize he's not just sort of like nodding, he's just full on like stealing, down to playing a cover of Jump Into the Fire by LCD Sound System, you know, the song from that day in Goodfellas where the guy's racing around with 10 million things to do. And I remember thinking, like, oh, this is great. And he actually later even apes a shot. It's a fantastic shot in Goodfellas of Henry Hill pointing at Robert De Niro's character, and Robert De Niro like sucks in a cigarette from the side of his mouth and like runs over, and they absolutely do that same shot. So there were all these like incredible, fantastic, exciting
things.
There's
even like the Wolf of Wall Street bit where they explain how MDMA works
while,
in the style of Quaaludes.
While the pills literally rain from the sky, just like magically. And then all of
and
this
a doctor
comes...
wanders through the scene explaining the love drug and the mechanics of this
and how
to
it
you.
Works, yeah. Yeah. But it's fantastic because the first hour of the film is this crazy over-the-top Wolf of Wall Street style thing, and then it kind of comes to an immediate halt when him, Berlusconi, is actually introduced. And you realize he's not quite what he was sort of built up to be. He's someone who's actually kind of empty. I mean, a part of his life where he doesn't have any power and he's trying to realize what he wants to do, and he's someone who is kind of... And a lot of it is kind of about another... big political leader with bad hair and possible, you know, sort of coming with a salesman background, but it sort of focuses on this is his main characteristic is charm, and there's a fantastic scene in it where he decides to sort of he's a bit of
to
a
get
loose
back
end,
in the game,
and he needs to get back into the game, so he opens up the phone book, picks a random name, and just calls them up and just sells them an apartment
that doesn't exist.
That doesn't like none of it exists. Wow. He knows nothing about them, and he doesn't let them know who he is or anything. He just full on sells an apartment. And I think a lot of it is to do with Tony Servillo, who doesn't look doesn't look anything like Berlusconi, but just, you know, in a much better way, I think, than Christian Bale in Vice, manages to sort of, like, approximate this guy without being too much of a caricature.
Like Hopkins as Nixon, which I didn't look anything like him, but really brought
just
a certain
nails it.
Sense, yeah.
And by the end of it, you're like, yeah, no, that's Nixon, yeah. So I really liked this film, and the more I thought about it, I really did, because it's such an interesting way to tell the story about someone. And I think Sorrentino particularly, I didn't actually like his previous film where he literally made a film about one of Berlusconi's predecessors, Andreotti,
El Divo.
That's pretty great.
And
really like
that was another one. I thought like he got too wrapped up in the actual politics of that one, and a lot of the like the minutiae of Italian sort of Senate.
This
one
is
upping.
Very universal.
Yes,
this is
that's what I
kind of
liked about El Divo, though. I
liked
the kind of that. With the approach you had with it, but I still like the sound of this stuff.
This is very different, and I really liked it. And I think I didn't, I was saying to Jay earlier, I haven't seen a whole lot of films this year, unfortunately, but that would definitely be my highlight.
Jay, your highlight.
I've got two or three that really stood out, and I'll be fairly quick on it because I'm not going to hog it. But
Jay may be saving some space for something else.
I might be. The three I really liked, aside from Picnic at Hanging Rock, which I'd seen before, but it was great anyway. And it was
my
great to see.
Loved it.
Particularly on the big screen, so I won't kind of dwell on that. But one I know Darren was a huge favourite of, Happiest Lazaro, which I really, really loved. I know Darren isn't really a favourite, I was joking, but this was one of the films of Hustle Me. I really, really loved it. It's a film of two halves, to kind of
borrow to use a cliche
kind of phrase. How much you'll get out of the second half really depends on which the change and how much you kind of go with it is. But I thought it was really brilliant. And kind of moving from that kind of social order into kind of the magical realism kind of state in the second half, I thought it was done superbly well.
I thought it was quite magical realist throughout, to be fair. I mean, even the establishing shots,
yeah, but
where
it is a
when
little,
is
yeah.
this, what's happening?
Yeah, no, but yeah. it's deliberately kind of obscure on the time, okay. but then there are inferences with
and
like
indications
mobile phones
that, yes.
and stuff like that. But there is still a kind of a shift that does take place, and I really loved it and really went with it. So that was very much a highlight of mine. My other two then, which I loved, were What Time Is Death, Paul Dwan's documentary on the KLF and their return. This was an absolute riot. Funny, weird, strange, serious, touching, respectable, but also bizarre, about artistic integrity, about death, about how we should laugh at it maybe, and maybe not take it as seriously as we do. It's just great, complete kind of doing what Ireland does best, is making documentaries really, really well. And this is top level stuff. I absolutely adored it. It killed me.
It's in no way flippant about what is a very ridiculous story. It's respectful and sort of, you know, poking holes in it.
It's deadly serious,
time.
Like, and really respectful, which makes it, to be honest with you, because you can laugh at everything beyond that.
Yeah,
it's so much. They invite you to do so.
Boy, did you laugh. I sat next to Jay, and I can confirm he was inconsolable.
Oh, yeah, and, like, I mean, you will think about mince pies. That's all I can say.
There are so many lovely little details going on.
Yeah,
in
so many asides, little weird kind of mini stories and visuals that are going on.
And it's an extremely efficient 82 minutes. Doesn't
yes.
waste a second.
Not it doesn't.
Paul Dwan knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, and he knows what he wants out of film.
It's quite possibly my hello at the festival so far.
Yeah, that Lazaro, and the last one I'll mention is Ashes Purest White, which Darren has seen as well.
Yes, and Darren actually liked this one.
This was absolutely terrific. I wasn't a major fan of A Touch of Sin. Was it A Touch of Sin?
Yeah,
so it was it's a kind of a three-story kind of structure, which kind of inconsistent, this, I think, is the word to be charitable. Some very good stuff in it, but didn't quite work as a whole for me. This very much did. It was about 2 hours 10 minutes, maybe 2 hours 15, and it ran like gangbusters. A strange, odd little odyssey. It goes through various, like, the editing of the film is so smooth and so odd that you don't really understand the kind of little detours it takes along the way. It's like it's being made up as it goes along, but obviously there's an expert hand guiding it.
Yeah. Well, what really struck me is its willingness to look. It's a movie, and I mean, like, there's a discussion where one character talks about herself as a prisoner of the universe, and there's also another conversation, a really long, extended conversation in a movie that begins as a study of, like, gang activity in China about UFO sightings and how strange it is and whether or not there are aliens amongst us. And there's a sense that the film almost in some ways feels like an alien cataloguing this, because there are a number of, like, really great moments in the film that don't really necessarily add anything to narrative except theme. But
feel important to it.
Feel important, where the camera will just focus on things and let you draw them in.
Yeah.
It's really good with diegetic sound. Like, you get that sound of, like, when music plays, it doesn't play on the soundtrack, it plays
it's
through speakers crackling in the background.
Yeah.
And so you get this incongruous sight of people reacting to the village people, or ballroom dancing, or watching television.
Village people, which happens twice.
Yes.
And really great, and it's really unexpected. Yeah. You just don't see it coming. And it's like, what? Okay.
But it's beautiful. It's absolutely fascinating watching people.
Beautifully shot.
It is absolutely
great
stunning.
Camera work.
Yeah.
I absolutely adored it, and it's one I kind of already look forward to revisiting. And, like, for an over 2 hour film, which I get a bit grumpy about these days, I adored it.
It feels significantly shorter than Happy as Lazaro.
Not bad, Darren. It feels significantly shorter than a lot of films, but we'll get to that anon.
And Ronan.
The first thing I saw taking the festival off to a great start was Rafiki, which is the Kenyan film that played in Cannes last year, I think, first Kenyan film to play in Cannes. And it's just, like, gorgeous lesbian love story. It hits a lot of familiar beats in sort of queer film plot structures, but there's this freshness to seeing it in this context. It's absolutely wonderful. The leads are magnetic, and it refuses to allow itself be in any way tragic towards the end of things. You know, it sort of flirts with a tragic ending and then says, you know what, no, we've had enough of those. And it allows you to sort of exit the cinema thinking, yes.
We're seeing a bit more of that now in Christian America.
It's absolutely,
like,
happening a lot in the
which
last
is a really welcome kind of band for that.
It's a refusal to you know, allow these stories to be defined that way anymore. That was really, really good. But I think to echo Jay again on what time is death, absolutely wonderful. And for me, absolutely, the highlights of this festival pretty much since then have been documentary. I saw an extremely good double bill last night of Fathers and Sons.
Which I saw as well. And that's
the, I think, Lebanese-produced Syrian documentary on the Al-Nusra Front.
Extremely tough.
A very, very tough watch.
And very important. But
sort of undercover all-access story of young men being trained by their fathers to fight for the cause. And,
Yeah, we talked about it last night. And I was saying, it's the director's kind of insistence on not editorializing all over it and going for the cheap shot of emotion is really to its credit. It's very observant in that way, quietly so, and probably unnecessarily so, given the situation and the dangers within.
Absolutely,
but it's incredibly well made.
Yeah. The access he gets is incredible.
Oh,
and
my
it's
God,
just
I've never
really
seen
harrowing.
This. Yeah,
and despite the fact, you know, there are kids who are making fake bombs and jumping on them and you watch them explode, it's really horrible. The possibly the most disturbing thing you see in it is them just fighting.
Yeah, and you can see that kind of trauma at large of kids just punching each other because they've no other way of getting it out of their system than what you see day in, day out.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And it's really interesting, I think, sort of down to cultural sensitivities more than anything else, but you never see, you see some little girls, but you never see
women don't
any
exist
point.
In any way, shape, or
form. I think there's a moment halfway through the film where you realize that there is a wife in the scene
and gets shouted at,
shut up woman,
yeah
and that's the only time you really realize she's
and it's
there.
Off camera, she's off camera.
It's extremely good on gender roles and how they're so baked into societies everywhere that it's just caused this kind of catastrophe that just passes on from generation to generation. It's really good, and all that is sort of under the surface.
It's not explicit,
it doesn't
and it's, it allows the audience to kind of draw that from it. Really, really good,
and it's weirdly good at finding humor.
Yeah, there's some odd little
places.
Funny
I
things.
I laughed quite a bit, and I felt really uncomfortable in doing it in a way.
I think we did needed it, though. I think it was very important in that regard.
Absolutely. And I followed that up directly with Jonathan Gass, He Saved My Life, which is this magnificent Israeli documentary about a gay porn star, Jonathan Gass. I wasn't familiar with him, but he was huge, I guess sometime around 10 years ago from what the story is talking about. Director followed him around for 7 years after sort of incidentally meeting him in a bar, seeing him like leap around and a maniac, and just with this great directorial sensibility thought, I'm going to follow that guy, and just comes across this incredible story through it. And again, it's the very same as A Father's and Sons, actually. It's that kind of non-interventionist attitude where you sort of think sometimes, God, maybe you should say to these people that what they're talking about is, you know, worrying. But it's stronger for not doing that.
I think most documentaries are. I think there's a tendency for documentarians sometimes to place themselves in the story in a way that generally can obscure the story they're trying to tell, and it drives me mad sometimes when it happens. Sometimes it's necessary and sometimes it's forever, but you should really know the difference. Yeah. That's the thing I do.
But this again is fantastically funny. He's got an amazingly supportive mother who he comes out wearing these sort of lace and leather harnesses to, and she's like, well, it's a bit revealing. And Skyping her back home and showing her all these lovely new thongs he's bought. It's absolutely incredible. I enjoyed it so much. I think it is my highlight of the festival so far. And went down very well with the crowd. The director, he was there for a Q&A afterwards, and he wanted to Skype Jonathan Agassi, who he said had insisted to him that he personally thank every person at the screen.
Aww, that's great. That's pretty awesome.
His life story.
I like that. He sounds like an Agassi fella.
Hey. Stop
it. the film absolutely conveys that while not getting away from the more difficult aspects of sort of the trauma he's undergone as a gay man who's then, you know, going out into the world and putting himself out there, the performativity of porn. It's absolutely wonderful.
Mm. All right. In terms of my stuff, thank you very much for not stealing my big one, which is my favorite film of the festival so far, which is one I saw this morning, and I'm possibly riding high off, which is The Man Who Feels No Pain.
You smiled so much when I saw you after this.
Amazing.
I don't
it's just
I've ever
pure
heard
joy.
You laugh so much.
You did, actually.
Oh, yeah.
But we're going to talk about that
we'll
later.
We'll come back to that in a minute.
But yeah, no, The Man Who Feels No Pain is an Indian film. It's from last year, premiered at TIFF. It's astonishing. It is basically, on one level, a superhero spoof movie. It's about a kid who feels no pain. You can Google it. Don't worry. The film assures you can Google it. But basically, he grows up on 80s action movies, raised by his hippie uncle, who basically instills in him this value of like right and wrong and how you deal with injustice in society.
And how you protect yourself from somebody who can't feel any pain.
Yeah.
You must say ouch when you're hit.
There's like an extended monologue of teaching him to say ouch or double ouch.
That's such a good bit, isn't it?
It's amazing. But basically what happens is, you know, he sort of develops in, he's kept very sheltered because most kids with this condition don't survive past age four because obviously you're not socially conditioned to feel pain.
Oh,
you
God,
think
right.
that you, yeah, you, for obvious reasons, you're not aware of things that are problems and that
right.
can lead to horrible
There's
things.
There's an extraordinary early montage of him hurting himself in various ways. Yeah. Slitting his hand. It's so fast-paced.
Yeah, it just keeps moving and moving and moving. And I mean, Indian cinema can be quite long. This is 2 hours and 17 minutes, but the average Indian film can be over 3 hours.
Yeah.
So this is basically a Varda by Indian sort of metrics. And it's staggering. It just keeps going. It's really fast. It's very modern and hip. It has the requisite 6 songs required for a Bollywood hit, but it incorporates them in a very modern way. In particular, it eschews the idea of a choreographed dance number for one of them to do a fight sequence, which is wonderfully it's amazing. They're just amazing. And it is a joy from beginning to end. It's wonderfully self-aware. It's very playful. It clearly adores 80s action movie cinema, superhero genre work. But it's also got this really sweet sensibility at its core, in particular that sort of like C.S. Lewis thing about, you know, when you grow up, do you put away childish things, which include the fear of being seen as being childish. It's really sweet. The audience loved it. I loved it. It's one of the best experiences I've had in the cinema in a very, very long time. And I hardly recommend it. I would also double down on a recommendation from each of the previous ones. I love Loro. I also loved Ash's Purest White, which is probably my second favorite film in the festival. And with Ronan, Rafiki as well is also great. A couple of other recommendations, which are very broad and a little bit more qualified. I really like Fighting With My Family. It's very straightforward, no surprises in there. Sports Rags to Riches story, but it's well told, has a sense of humor and self-aware. Dear Son, which is a story about radicalization and a father dealing with the realization that the son is not the man he wanted to be, which is very touching. It's a little slow in places, a little broad, doesn't necessarily stick the landing, but it's very thoughtful and anchored in a set of great performances. And then Angelo, which is about as good as European director does Barry Lyndon but with a slave can be. It is a little unaware of the racial politics. It's a little awkward with the racial politics of it, but it's self-aware enough in that it is a movie where a bunch of characters basically commodify the life of an African slave for their own entertainment and amusement and purposes, while the movie kind of does the same thing. But it's it's very tricky. I'm not sure the movie stays entirely on the right side of it, but it looks beautiful, it's clever, and I was really, really impressed with it. In terms of other general thoughts about the festival, how has the festival been for you guys?
I feel I haven't seen as I said, really like Laura, but I feel like I've had bad luck. You know, a lot of the ones that I went to, I've kind of been like, oh, that was fine or not good. Like, I ran along to Her Smell and
oh dear God,
and then was immediately like, right, okay.
Yeah.
And on Thursday night, similarly, I went along to Vox Lux that I'd been looking forward to, but also was like, it's not terrible. It's just, it wasn't great.
Vox Lux is one of the better ones that I've seen.
No, it is. It's just, it wouldn't have been...
It's not good.
I thought it was built up, and I thought it was going along, and like, this is going to be fantastic, and it's a lot of... And it was funny, after Loro, a good example of like, how style can just completely make your film soulless, versus if you're playing with soullessness and style and all those other things. And then obviously the film we all just came from, which I think was also a bit of a disappointment.
Another Day of Lights.
Yeah,
I think that's the thing. If you had caught me exactly 2 hours ago, I would have said, you know what, the festival is going okay, because I was coming off the back of three, you know,
four-star films,
and the audience award thing, which had made me forget the trauma of the past couple of days, because, to be honest, I've seen some trash. There's been a lot of bad
One thing
films.
As well I was glad about, like, I've gone to the surprise film, I think every year since I started going to this, whereas this year I was going to the Massive Attack concert, and I was a little,
oh,
which
God,
was
you so
right good. Opposite, so I was like, maybe if the film is 2 hours long, I'll be out in time. Or, and then I was sort of thinking, you know what, no, I'll just go to the concert. And then checked on Twitter and saw like, oh, I dodged a bullet there. Yeah.
I checked Twitter too, and the only reason I knew what the film was is because several people had walked out.
To be clear to listeners who are not familiar and not following the festival, the surprise film, which was moved from its traditional closing Sunday slot to the previous Sunday slot for reasons
because
that became
takes a week.
Very clear.
That's
once you're watching it, was the 2 hour and 45 minute S. Zoller Craig, or S. Craig Zoller movie Dragged Across Concrete, starring Vince Vaughn and Mel Gibson, in a heist movie that takes forever and is incredibly petty and mean-spirited. Dragged Across Concrete is both a title and a description, if you listen to them.
I was sitting with Darren and Niall when we were chatting about which film it could be, and then Niall made maybe it's Dragged Across Concrete, and I laughed with my naivety.
As
if. Well, is that a kind of show, something that's 2 hours 40 minutes long, for God's sake? Let's settle in and see what it is. Imagine my surprise then.
When the title card appears.
And the film I have no desire to see, yeah. Because I really, really did not promise have Block 99 at all.
Okay, well...
This is worse.
Before we get to Dragged Across Concrete on this, I will make an argument in defense of it as a surprise film. It's a bad film, let's be entirely clear. This is not it's a good film argument, but this is locking a bunch of people up in a room that with a film that they probably would never have watched.
I would definitely
for good reason from the sound of it.
I mean, you don't know that until you watch
it.
We were sitting on the Lewis on the way back from the point afterwards, and there was this wonderful innocent doe-eyed kid who was like, who directed that film? And we were like,
Hitler.
Okay, but like that's somebody who wouldn't have seen it otherwise.
I feel like, and I should make clear, I didn't go to this. I haven't gone to the surprise film pretty much ever because I'm afraid of things like this happening.
Yeah, and you're right. For every Get Out, there is a Dragged Across Concrete. Yeah.
Well, the last surprise film I went to was at the LGBT one here last year, and that was the Steve Coogan and
Paul Rudd one, where they had a ranch and a kid.
Not good. Still not released here. Won't be either. You know, I live in fear of that kind of thing, and...
But in fairness, though, it's probably not the worst film I've seen at this festival. That's the tragedy of it.
Oh, God, yeah.
Now, this got a gentleman's two on the four-star scale.
This has got a one.
He's saying this all week.
But, like, when they give out awards at the end, like, I generally give in the 2 to 3 range, because it's, you know, it's either not good or good. It's rarely like...
It's rare, I would say one. Like, it's
rarely transcendental.
Likewise.
And it has to actually earn the one.
So,
like, and each of the films that I've seen, and by the way, average, I've given out a total of 2 ones at every festival I've been to so far.
Okay.
This year, I've given out 4, and it's not over yet.
Oh, God.
Every film, I
might add that I've given out less than a one on 2 occasions, which is remarkable.
Did you tear the crate in half?
Oh, no, I just gave them one of that rating, but I mean in actual rating.
All right. I'm on 7 ones so far.
What?
Wow.
Yeah. Whoa, yeah, okay. Yeah.
I mean, where do I start? Yeah. Family First, which was one of the worst trashy gangster films.
Insufferable, one of these things that things
What if David
really,
O. Russell directed
really
Mean Streets?
Fascinating, irritating character, except... He's just really irritating.
Yes.
It's unbearable.
Her Smell, which I gave 2.5 down.
I gave 2 to 2.
But that seemed better and better the more films I've seen.
It seems like so good. The case for me. I thought Her Smell was probably
the worst.
Well,
the talent involved was fantastic. And I mean, there are moments towards the end where it's not awful.
But towards the end, after enduring so much.
It's a bit at the start where it plays the same scene 6 times.
I didn't mind it.
For 90 minutes.
I think all of its irritation is entirely intentional and expected for that.
No, that gets at the one for me. It's like, it's one thing to be incompetent, it's another to be mean-spirited and vindictive.
I didn't mind it in that regard. And again, since I've seen so many worse films that seems okay.
It's gone off a bit.
I think
I'm going to go find the ballot
box. 3 because I wasn't mad about it, but I was also, well, it's far better than Her Smell.
I also saw Shadow, which is Dragonstone, the movie, if you've ever watched Game of Thrones. It's basically just listless, dreary, grey lump of a film.
Counterpoint.
With exposition dumps over and over and over.
This was a film that got the Gentleman's Two. This is a sequence in which an army cocks their razor blade umbrellas and rides rides them down the street while catapulted out of
that's fine, but that comes after 2 hours of dialogue of people saying, you're really good at chess, but in this bigger game, who are the pawns? It's like, if you have your razor umbrellas, deploy them early. Don't make me wait for them.
Chekhov's razor umbrella.
Enough.
Yeah.
Oh, razor umbrella.
It's a bad film.
It's not a good film.
I turned to Jay at one point and said there are 40 minutes to go, and I think people turned at his reaction. It was so loud.
I think we'll mention as well, I only stayed for 40 minutes of it because it's one of the worst things ever, which was Carl Morley's Out of Blue, which, and I'm a huge Morley fan, but I got into weird hysterics and I had to leave the cinema lest I be beaten by somebody, which is fair.
Genuine. There were many, many really quiet moments where
I was in tears, couldn't stop laughing.
I had to pretend to cough multiple times to cover.
And somehow
tittering.
It's... only the second worst Lynch pastiche that I've seen this festival.
God.
I mean, like, the thing with Out of Blue is that it's based on a Martin Amis novel, which is Night Train, which is supposed to be funny. Yes.
And I've read it.
Yeah, it's about... It's
come
a,
on!
Oh, yes.
And there are moments where it kind of descends into, like, a camp classic, where you have, like, an astrophysicist whose murder prompts an investigation, who's recorded on YouTube saying things like, "Can we follow the energy trail? Like a trail of clues to the heart of this dark matter."
The worst episode of CSI that they didn't record because it was too bad. Ugh. Dreadful.
I think my favorite walking out story from the film festival was I was like storming out of High Rise, and the lighthouse staff were very nice and were like, "Fine that you're leaving, but the director is literally waiting for the Q&A. Would you mind like pretending you're going to the bathroom or something?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, sure." Like, you know.
No, I mean, like, and we want to talk about the gentleman's too. The moment that earned out of blue, it's one star was a moment that can only be described as Schrodinger's sex offender, Schrodinger's pedophile.
It's
something like,
so
I mean,
you're wondering if he is a sex pedophile.
No,
adding it straight to you by Patricia Clark.
Yeah. Talking to Schrodinger's child sex offender victims.
I saw the poster for this and I immediately was kind of like, this could be a disaster or a masterpiece, but I'm not going to gamble on it.
I remember seeing Carl Morley tweet pictures of Patricia Clarkson herself on the set having loads of fun. I thought, this is perfect.
Yeah,
I love Morley,
great.
I love Clarkson.
And Clarkson and Noir as well. Yeah.
Yep. It's not exceptional. It is so heavy-handed.
Detective Mike Houlihan, who is only ever referred to as Detective Mike Houlihan. Anyway, sorry, we should hurry this up, but Jay, what else you got?
I mean, there's not much more beyond that except to say the one we saw today, Another Day of Life, which is like the worst Oliver Stone film you've ever made, mashed with a documentary. And neither succeeded because they undercut each other. It's like the sections of documentary go, "Why aren't I watching that film?" Yeah. Then we cut back to this Hollywoodization. Jazzy
cartoon
thing,
yeah.
Which is not good. Really, really not good.
The only thing down that road, sir, is hell.
It's the script was atrocious.
The delivery was not great either, to be honest.
And I'd imagine the book is good, because I do imagine this is like an experienced, well-versed journalist who probably wrote a very
effective
book.
From Richard Kapuscinski's book on the war in Angola, the Civil War, which became like a proxy war in the Cold War. And the book is terrific. It's this really existential war writing. I was so excited for this film. And I think within 10 minutes, we were all sort of looking at each other really uneasily, thinking, this is not going to go well.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't. It's caught between a sort of weird biography of Kapuscinski going, he was the heroic war journalist who didn't know if he should do the right thing. And
to be clear, the big moral choice that he has to make is, will he doom an entire African country or get the byline of his career?
Yeah.
And it's like, why are we rooting? What's going on here?
That's not remotely representative of things as they actually happened.
Yeah.
And furthermore, what's really frustrating is it's got these moments of interviewing these people, you know, now, many, many years down the line, and it almost has nuggets of interest there where they're reflecting back and things.
Absolutely,
they're in the same place. You can see a good film being made from
also
this.
Just it should be really pointed out that they are talking in their native language, and it cuts to this film, and it's filmed in English, like it's this, you know, remake, Hollywood remake of a European film, and it's horrible.
It's grotesque.
Absolutely,
it actually
horrible. It's an insult.
It sounds like the same guy did everyone's voices as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know.
Yeah, it's like one of those things, exactly.
And every
like,
talking English in a thick Polish accent.
Yeah, and every fascinating character, like the karate character, who was really, really interesting. And then she's kind of rendered as this sort of like beautiful, angelic love interest of the main white guy. And it was just so funny.
And nude as well, like at one point, which is very strange. Because there's a whole host of dead bodies of men who are clothed and she's lying there naked. And you're like, what?
That was the moment for me where I was like, oh God, she's literally becoming a dead wife in a film that should not be a dead wife.
10 minutes into the film where we were in the bar and I turned around and said, it's going to be a girlfriend this Christmas. The next while. And logo.
And for like a character who's actually given scenes where she's talking about wanting to improve education in her country, to be reduced to the sad dead wife in a dream sequence was just so
impressive. But even when she's given that speech where she wants to see Gigi and knows she's going to die.
Yeah.
Because you've seen that in many films.
I know, in a narrative
the
film.
The tragic
because
character.
Because she turns to him and goes, will you write about me one day?
Will
I read about myself one day?
No.
Sure.
No, you will
maybe.
Not.
Boom. I'm sorry, I got crushed by that falling fridge and anvil simultaneously.
I think that does edge out her smell, because her smell is just kind of like, it was bad, whereas that's kind of nearly offensively bad.
Yeah. Just totally misrepresented.
So many films edge out her smell, though.
And Ronan, very quickly, we are in a bit of a time crunch here. Anything you'd like to talk about that we haven't...
Oh, no, I think I've pretty much... You're accurate. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
where you're going with this. Ah, yes. I've seen many films and I have a long list, so I miss the stinker of the bunch. Dub Days is a local production, I will say, kindly. It's absolutely dreadful. And I said this before, I think I went digging through my letterbox to find when the last time I saw a film that bad was. It was 4 years ago at this festival.
Oh.
Also an Irish production that wouldn't have got in if not for the fact that this festival programs any Irish film. Any at all.
Not
if,
any Irish film. We're going to talk about that in a moment.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
No, Dub Days is really, really terrible. It's like somebody sat down, saw The Young Offenders. It was like, you know what? That would be good, but if it had no sense of cultural specificity or location or humour. Right. It's this awful story of, you know, people who are soon going to be in college, just tramping around Dublin. It's constantly got weird references to Adam and Paul. It misquotes Adam and Paul. Because remember that great film, Adam and Paul? Oh, me! And it's not doing it knowingly at all. It's beyond bad.
Play it again.
Terrible
again.
Performance. it's...
I really didn't like this, did you?
Hated it. I really, really, really hated it. And I think everyone did too. I think you overheard.
I overheard people again, like Darren sitting quietly in a corner reading a book, listening to the ambient sound of Dublin City. Yeah, there was Dub Days did not go down particularly well. My own horrible experiences, I know Jay has talked about Out of Blue and Alex has talked about Her Smell, both of which got the gentleman's one. my two other ones, and this is really disappointing, they're the two big premieres of Irish films, the ones that were given the Friday night gala slots. This is A Girl from Mogadishu is one, which is the Megan McGurkin one, which is not good. The follow-up to Barry McGurkin, apologies. Yeah. The Price of Desire, the festival
favorites.
Opener from 2015 that was retroactively embargoed because reviews were so bad. This is a disaster. It's a story of Ifra Ahmed, which is a fascinating story. She campaigns against female genital mutilation and cutting, and she's done wonderful work, wonderful work. She's addressed the UN. She's sort of become a sort of a minor celebrity in Ireland, raising awareness of this cause internationally, and she deserves much better than this film gives her. This film looks like it was put together by somebody who has never watched a film but heard the concept described to them. There is a moment where we fade out to black, Irish style, from a city and smash cut to an idyllic beach. There's a moment, and again the dialogue is awful. There's a moment where after they've discovered the mutilation, which is a harrowing moment, they sit down with her and they say, I'm going to call for a colleague, a female colleague, she'll be here right now. Then the Somali translator says whatever it says in Somali but is subtitled, they're going to call for a female doctor. Then you get a monologue from inside Ifra's head saying, they told me that they would call for a female doctor. And then you cut to a doctor walking in.
Hello,
who is
I'm the female doctor.
Yeah.
And
it keeps going like this. It's god-awful. It's insufferable. It has no sense of structure. It has a memory that lasts into the previous scene and absolutely no further. There's a moment where a character shows up to threaten her just so she can lose faith, so she can gain it in the next scene where she saves the lives of two adorable children. It is god-awful. The casting is terrible. There's this weird thing where they do a sitcom wife situation with Joe Costello, where Joe Costello is played by an actor who looks vaguely like Joe Costello, but Emer Costello is played by Orla Brady, and she wanders into shot like it's some sort of cameo. They have this weird thing where Michael D. Higgins shows up to sign the bill into law, but he's played by a guy who's like 6 foot bald.
Oh my god. I want to see this.
It is terrible. Also, last night we saw She's Missing, which is atrocious as well. It's the other bad Lynch pastiche, except it's not as good as Out of Blue, because Out of Blue is at least fun. It's playful in places. You know, Schrodinger's pedophile aside, you could have fun with it. The issue with She's Missing is that it is like a parody of every bad indie movie that you have ever seen, contemplating on the existential mysteries of life and how horrible it is that people impose senses of self on you and how you have to struggle to define yourself in the world. It is terrible. There's a moment where Isa Gonzalez, to establish that her character is like flighty and inconsistent, she's in a house with her husband gone off to war. She's by herself. This is the first time she's had stability in her life. She's clearly not coping very well. She says to her old friend, "It's different now. I'm different." She proceeds to take a playing card, the Queen of Hearts, naturally, lights it on fire, throws it on top of a newspaper, sprinkles gasoline on it. The fire lights up. Somebody behind me in the cinema says, in their perfect Isa Gonzalez impression, "I'm different now. I light things on fire." And the movie continues in this pace. When it cut to black at the end, I whispered to myself, please God, let it be over, because the movie was so unfocused it was hard to tell. When the credits appeared, I whispered to myself, thank fuck, although apparently I didn't whisper it. It is horrible. And this is the thing, like, these are the big Irish premieres that are premiering at this festival.
It's a bad idea.
And the thing is, it's not like there's a dearth of choice.
It's
like,
not
I mean,
for lack of talent.
It's not for lack of talent and not from lack of choice. This is the thing, like, you can argue about the international films, maybe it hasn't been a good year. And I think that generally speaking, the January and February of this year have not been great in terms of major releases either. The stuff coming out of festivals maybe isn't as good as previous years. That's not the festival's fault. The festival can't control that. Yeah. The issue is that, like, now you have, and I've seen Hole in the Ground.
Yes.
Hole in the Ground is a better Irish film than any Irish film that I've seen at this festival. It opened this Friday, the last Friday of the festival. You could very easily have programmed it in as a premiere, turned it into
it
a big event.
It also was at Glasgow, which is on the exact same time as Dublin.
Yeah, and you could have done that with it, and it would have done tremendously. You have Hugh O'Connor, who shoots the photography for the festival, who directed Metal Heart.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is getting rave reviews and is beloved.
But it was at the Fla, so we can't have it.
But put that
arbitrary.
In the
because they don't have it.
Except for sure, it's because they don't care.
Yeah. Anyway, we have to wrap up because we got to rush to another film. Yeah. But we may Lord record another one of these, or we may not. But either way, we'll be back next Thursday.
And there's apocalyptic rain behind us, in case you're wondering
what the ambient sound is. All right, take it easy, guys. Bye.
Thank you.